This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on Eastern Long Island. Late last year, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers started work on a project designed to protect the beachfront in downtown Montauk from erosion. This was despite warnings that the approach, installing giant sand-filled bags, amounted to placing a hard structure on the beach that would be counterproductive. On today's program, Sustainable East End's Francesco Rhiannon talks with Kevin McAllister of the Sag Harbor-based environmental advocacy group Defend H2O. They talk about the status of the Montauk Beach Project, the sources of pond and base pollution, and recent rulings curbing the power of the Southampton Town Trustees to protect that town's beachfront.
Kevin McAllister, welcome to Sustainable East End.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to talk with you today about the current state of some of the burning issues dealing with water here on the East End. We'll talk about coastal resilience. We'll also talk about water quality. Let's start with one of the most controversial. The last time we spoke with you, we called you up about the plan by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to harden, even though they may not call it that, but harden the shoreline around Montauk by putting in these enormous geobags of sand. Tell us a little bit about that plan, and then we'll talk about what's been going on since we last spoke with you.
The geobags and geotubes, this is a reinforced fabric that ultimately they'll put a slurry of water and sand in and really seal them up. The Montauk project is comprised of over 14,000 bags stacked along 0.6 miles, so over half a mile, approximately 50 feet wide in width. And ultimately, the configuration is a sloping revetment. And then the final, work on it will be placing some sand over the top of this revetment and then ultimately trying to plant it with native beach vegetation.
Now, when we spoke with you, you had joined together with a number of other groups, your group being Defend H2O. You joined with the Surf Riders Association.
Actually, the Surf Rider is not named. It's Defend H2O. And members of the local chapter of Surf Rider, but they're named individually.
So you joined with a suit, and since then I've heard things have not gone all that well with that. What is the current status?
Well, the project actually commenced back in October, so the contractor has been moving along. He's, I'll say, at the eastern end of the project now with respect to at least building this sandbag seawall. It's interesting, and we had warned of this from the beginning with the narrowed winter profile, a winter beach. The ability to actually construct this width, the footprint of this structure, was going to be very difficult. And it's interesting because they're trucking in an enormous volume of mined sand, quarry sand, to ultimately build up the beach, create a berm where they can actually work behind it, you know, to kind of keep the ocean at bay, if you will. It's honestly pretty comical as well as tragic to watch this.
You mean they're actually trying to build a kind of dike so they can go ahead with constructing this project, and then what's going to happen to this berm?
Well, the berm itself, the material they're bringing in, is incompatible sand. It has a orange tone to it. It's, you know, because of the iron in our native soils. Ultimately, you know, it appears like dirt, and we're starting to call the project Dirtbag Beach, which really isn't funny. So aesthetically, if the sand is even there come summertime, it's going to be a rude awakening to the public, you know, the recreational users. There's concerns about water quality, you know, with this material that goes into suspension. It will create turbidity problems or cloudiness of the water. So we'll have to see how that fares. But, you know, they've already lost a great deal of the material just in the course of the winter, you know, activity, ocean activity. You know, that the nor'easter that came up recently took out a large amount of material. You know, the berm itself that, again, they had constructed so they could physically work behind it. You know, otherwise it wouldn't have been possible to even build this.
So what does this tell you about the longevity of this work and what that's going to mean for costs down the line?
Well, we haven't seen the real implications of this seawall. This is shoreline hardening, and that, you know, the science is quite settled in with respect to hardening of these hardening structures. They will accelerate the erosion of the fronting beach. So, you know, this material will inevitably go away. We'll be left with a hard structure then reflecting wave energy, which will cause the beach elevation to lower and then ultimately narrow. So, in essence, we will destroy this beach. It's just a matter of time. And again, as you know, they're finding it very difficult to even build this. You know, it's a sad state of affairs in Montauk right now.
I remember reading that when this work began, there were pretty active protests. People were going down on the beach. Who was there, and what's happened? What are those folks doing now?
When the project, the construction actually started in mid-October, you know, up until that point, you know, some of us had been objecting and really fighting the approval of this project for the last year or two. You know, ultimately, when the machines were on the beach and cut into a native dune to tie back the structure, in other words, you know, where they basically buried into the dune, you know, the community turned up in arms and turned out. A number of protesters were arrested, you know, through social media and attendance at the various public meetings. One meeting, there were over 300 you know, individuals in the room protesting the construction of this project. But, you know, there was some hope that the town of East Hampton would withdraw and cease, but they decided to carry on. And here we are several months later, you know, watching this project just, again, be in a sad way, very comical. And as I said, the worst is to come when we actually lose the beach. What's out there right now is cosmetics by virtue of trucking in just this enormous amount of sand. It won't be long before that's gone, and then the implications of the structure will be fully felt.
So are they aware that they are going to lose the beach, or are they just in denial?
Scientists, including myself, have told them this. They understand it, I think, intuitively, but they are in denial with respect to a public face. You know, this was sandy money going back several years ago. It initially started, I believe, at $20 million. It was reduced to $10 million. And, you know, some of the local elected officials, you know, they wanted to respond to properties that were threatened. And, you know, in this instance, they looked at it as free federal money. And the Corps felt, you know, this is what they wanted to do as opposed to a sand-only project, and everyone went along. They were complicit in the process. And what's really core here into, you know, our litigation as well as, you know, our public position on this, this is in clear contradiction to the town's own local waterfront revitalization plan, which is a town law that, you know, prohibits hardening structures from being placed on ocean beaches. You know, it's disingenuous by the Army Corps of Engineers and others to suggest, you know, the sandbags that feel concrete-like are a soft approach. You know, this is absolutely not true.
So what might be a soft approach? What would be the alternative?
In the short term, and this is not sustainable long term, is pumping beaches, beach nourishment. There is the forthcoming Fire Island to Montauk Point project that the Army Corps will be behind. We are hopeful that, again, in the short term, you know, there will be a beach that will be pumped. I know town officials and state officials are all saying, oh, this is temporary. You know, there's a beach coming. Well, you know, in recognition of the implications of sea level rise, we can either keep up with it economically of pumping beaches, and, you know, it's just environmentally unsustainable. So, you know, the reality of our status on Long Island, and for that matter, the East Coast and other locations, is we have to start withdrawing from the coast.
I read a chilling assessment about a month ago saying that for every degree centigrade of increase in global temperature, we will be seeing 65 feet of sea level rise. Now, we are already almost into the degree. This is from here on out. It's thought that business as usual, if we keep on going the way we are going to be seeing something between 4 and 7 degrees centigrade. Just do the math on that. What does that mean for us?
I'm not familiar with the projections connected to the temperature changes, but I will tell you that New York State recently put into law the projections into their regulations, and I believe this is by the 2050s, we're looking at 2.5 foot rise. That's what they're accepting, and that's what they are going to manage for. And the turn of the century, 6 feet. And I can tell you, as a lifelong waterman and you know, just a life on the beach, you know, a matter of several inches has enormous implications horizontally. Again, pumping beaches, you know, every couple of years at millions and millions of dollars, will never keep up with it financially. And the dredges that can do this sort of work are in such high demand up and down the East Coast that, you know, to plan for a project, you have to be years out. And, you know, a beach can vanish in one storm event. So it's a loser's prospect. And I'm hoping that our elected officials start to really act as elected officials, start to think 20 years out instead of their next election cycle, and show some courage to make these decisions now that, you know, are going to allow for tomorrow.
Yeah, and even with those projections, I mean, generally the trend has been that the projections, every time new studies come out, the projections are actually worse. So to say that we're going to plan for a certain projection and just that projection may not be the wisest course of action. When you say withdraw from the coast facing this, what does that mean? Does that mean we have to leave Long Island?
No, we have to pull back, relocate. Retreat, coastal retreat is the, you know, fundamental term. Higher risk areas, have to start implementing plans and actions, more importantly, that are going to ultimately, you know, if homes can't be actually physically lifted and moved, in some areas, we've got to move toward abandonment. And that's the reality. I know that's a very bitter pill to accept, but that is the reality. You know, ultimately, again, we will never keep up with trying to keep sand in front of these vulnerable areas by virtue of, you know, the projections in sea level rise.
Now, this is already happening in southern Florida, and not only has there been coastal flooding even on sunny days, but there's also been the problem of saltwater intrusion into water supplies. And I know that Defend H2O is not just talking about coastal resilience, but also about water quality. Just as a bridge to that discussion, what are the implications of sea level rise for our water quality?
Well, when you consider coastal areas and drawing fresh water, you know, ultimately as densities increase, and then you're drawing on, you know, there's a water demand, a freshwater demand for potable water and, unfortunately, irrigation. You know, as you draw that water, and then, you know, it allows seawater to permeate the groundwater. And what magnifies that is certainly sea level rise. So the, you know, the sea is finding its way, penetrating deeper, you know, further into the mainland. and ultimately rendering drinkable wells, no longer potable. It's a serious and a major threat that some areas like South Florida are grappling with right now. In the case of Montauk, they have to municipal water is piped out from the aquifer in and around East Hampton area out to Montauk because of saltwater intrusion. Some of these wells are just not potable any longer.
So that's already happening, and you're saying it's a kind of a vicious cycle. You have increased development, and then that means pumping more water out, meaning that seawater then tends to intrude more rapidly.
Correct.
That's a scary scenario.
It is a scary scenario, and in the realm of water, what I find unconscionable, and particularly in the Hamptons, what we call water hogs, the amount of water that is being drawn, a finite supply in a sense, of potable water and being used to irrigate, constant irrigation on expansive turf areas, that's just unacceptable. And we have to do something about that because, again, our water supply, our drinking water supply, although when you look at the volume of it, is insurmountable, in reality, if we are tainting that water, allowing it to become tainted by saltwater intrusion or contamination, then it's not an infinite supply.
This is Sustainable East End. We are listening to Francesca Rhiannon talking with Kevin McAllister of the environmental advocacy group Defend H2O.
So let's move to some of the other issues having to do with water quality here. There's been some work at Georgica Pond. I wonder if you could address some of the problems at Georgica Pond and other places like that in the area. Talk about what is being done to try to clean up those bodies of water.
Georgica Pond in East Hampton is not unique. Many of our East End ponds and have contaminant problems, particularly from nitrogen and phosphorus, the nutrients. Bottom sediments that, the muck that builds up over time because these are what we'll call sinks, receiving stormwater runoff and other decomposing algal blooms, for instance, will settle on the bottom, constantly supplying phosphorus for reoccurring algal blooms. So the buildup of muck or bottom sediments, you have stormwater influences. Nutrients come in, nitrogen from lawn fertilizers, from household septic systems. By virtue of these being isolated systems, they don't benefit from flushing. They're starting to show, they've reached the tipping point now where we're seeing these chronic algal blooms, and in many cases, these are toxic algal blooms that are both a threat to humans as well as pets.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I brought my granddaughter out with me for a nice canoe trip on Georgica Pond, and we were just revolted by the green muck that we just had to go through. Now, let's actually go back to some of the legal issues around water cleanup, and this will bring us back to our earlier discussion about what's being done around public beaches. There was a recent decision by the state's highest court which said it would not allow an appeal by the Southampton Town Trustees of a ruling that stripped them of their ability to regulate erosion control devices. Explain this ruling and its implications for us.
The trustees, particularly Southampton and East Hampton towns, these go back to colonial law, but they had jurisdiction over beaches and other shorelines. And they've been steadfast in their opposition to shoreline hardening structures for the reasons I describe. Ultimately, they will accelerate erosion, and you lose the beach. You lose recreational space and what we refer to as the common areas. By virtue of the challenges to their authority, the courts have ruled in favor of private interests to strip them of their authority to regulate these hardened structures on the beach. So, you know, ultimately, as a regulatory authority, if they are now removed from that authority to say no to seawalls and rock revetments, you know, that's very problematic. We would have to rely on groups like Defend H2O and others, Surf Rider Foundation, to, you know, challenge the shoreline hardening projects as they're being proposed. I need to point out that, you know, there is state law under the Coastal Management Act and Coastal Erosion Hazard Act. This is a longstanding law going back to the 80s, that takes a hard line against shoreline hardening structures and views coastal retreat as the appropriate action, all in the interest of protecting, you know, a viable resource, the beaches for the public. And unfortunately, that is not being properly administered by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And I will submit that many of the towns that have local authority and deal with these applications are not even aware that, you know, these regulations and policies exist. So we're kind of operating in isolation, you know, town by town. And, you know, the some of these mistakes, case in point with Montauk, you know, we have to really do everything in our power to ensure that we're not on a track for armoring the coast, because in the long run, and that's not too far out, we're going to live to regret that day.
So you're actually saying that the state's highest court has taken the short-term interests of private landowners over the public interest.
Absolutely. And I'll say some municipalities are complicit, you know, who challenged, I believe, the trustee's authority. There's been two municipalities, the Village of West Hampton Dunes, as well as the Village of Quogue, because they both have had separate issues, but, you know, interest in shoreline hardening within their jurisdictional areas. And unfortunately, pandering to some of the private property owners that perhaps their properties were at risk. And rather than, you know, try to move back, the reaction is to armor, to put in structures to ultimately protect these properties. You know, there's a really drastic example of this in Southampton, you know, along a stretch of beach, what we call sheet pile wall, the steel wall juts out. The wall is on three sides, and the ocean actually, even at low tide, is lapping against the fronting wall. Mm. And you can watch the beach being eroded on both sides of the property. You know, so it's out there like almost a it's artificial, of course, but it just stands out there because somehow this property owner was granted permits to fortify around the property. And at a high tide, you can't even pass across this property because, again, it impedes passage.
Now, your suit against the Army Corps of Engineers?
We named all the parties that had a hand in the approval, principally the Army Corps of Engineers, as well as the town of East Hampton.
So you failed in being able to stop that project. What is the status? Have you given up? Are you continuing? So that's part one of my question. And part two is the larger strategy, legal and in terms of organizing, that you want to pursue and what you would like listeners to know about in terms of helping out.
Okay. With respect to the lawsuit, yes, having the judge finally, work proceeded around mid-October. We had filed a preliminary injunction in advance of that work. The initial judge wrote an opinion denying our injunction, and ultimately that was then finalized for the judge that's been assigned to the case, I believe the end of November. So work was proceeding all along. At this juncture, I mean, it's almost complete relative to placement of the structure. So we have reconvened to see, you know, really how far we want to pursue this. You know, it'd be very difficult. You know, I mean, I'm somewhat experienced in environmental litigation, and I find it next to impossible that, you know, to have a judge rule in our favor where the structure would be actually removed. So even if we were to prevail, the ruling would be yes, Town of East Hampton, yes, Army Corps of Engineers, you got it wrong, don't do it again. So the remedy is just not there. With respect to, you know, moving forward, there will be more walls proposed, there's no question. And, you know, Montauk, I hope, is the beginning of a movement to oppose these structures. The community rose with respect to, the Montauk project, and, you know, I will do everything in my power to ensure that information is provided to the communities that would be affected by this, as well as the larger region. And with a larger region, we have to have a movement where we are challenging our elected officials to, number one, recognize the implications of sea level rise, and to ultimately adhere to both state law that, you know, prohibits structures from going in, and to take a long-term view that beach nourishment is just not sustainable, both economically and environmentally.
Sounds like we need a political revolution.
I would agree with that. You know, most people were just aghast at what happened in Montauk, and you know, we can't be asleep again. You know, we have to pay very close attention. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of public participation, because ultimately, you know, five people in a room when a board meeting, when they're discussing a project for rocks or geobags, you know, that's not going to do it. But, you know, a local, you know, town board meeting with 200 people makes a huge difference. And, you know, had we had those 200 people in the room a year or two ago, I don't think we'd be talking about this today.
Well, Kevin McAllister, it's been really great to get updated on the struggles here to protect our coastlines and the necessity for the ongoing struggle to protect our water in general. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
This is Sustainable East End. We heard Francesca Rhiannon talking with Kevin McAllister of Defend H2O. More information about that organization can be found at its website, defendh2o.org. These programs are archived at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com with additional information about the subjects discussed. Today's program was produced by Francesca Rhiannon and Tony Ernst.